gone one up top. We're gone one up top. All the other formations, they surely have to stop. We're gone one up top. We're gone one up top. Jamie and Jordan, the bullshit never stops.
You're listening to the One Up Top podcast, hosted by Jamie and Jordan. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and all of our social media outlets at One Up Top Podcast.
And a very big welcome to this week's episode of One Up Top. We're back in domestic action after a magical few weeks lording it in the Aviva and bowing out as heroes in Greece, regardless of the result. Big business on the card this Sunday. Jordo, have you your big bows balls with you?
Do and DJ, here we are, episode 15. We're joined by the one and only Mark Rossler, and no better man to have after a bit of European heartbreak. Passing on the baton over to Wardy. Rossi, thanks for coming on. How are you getting on, pal?
Well. I was better until a few minutes ago, but yeah, thanks.
He thought he was coming to RTE. It turns out it was just a shed with an Albanian man. But
wasn't even offered a cup of tea. Shut
Yeah, it doesn't work, to be fair. We want to thank our guests from last week, or from 2 weeks ago, Brian Kelly and Ev Kane, who came on and had a good chat with us. And as always, want to thank our sponsors, New Age Barbers. Come on, you can make a joke about my hair or Mark's if you want to have a look at it.
Well, I don't know. Well, it's okay. I'll go to Wardy's hairdresser.
There you go. That's in Turkey. Yeah. Grand Cru Beers and Vault Fashions, as always. So we'll kickstart with probably the most amazing trip that we've ever been on and possibly could ever be on in Europe, which was Pauk away. And I think an amazing trip with amazing people, Jordan, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a great week away for me, and it was a couple of days for everybody else. I overstayed my journey, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Homer's
first
Odyssey.
Time away in 18 months. So, look, the fixture, obviously, the result didn't go as we planned, but I was content financially because I wouldn't have a pot to piss in going to Rijeka next week.
Yeah, it was an amazing place to go. I mean, the locals were brilliant. The pub we were in was brilliant. The hotel with the rooftop pool. Even the police.
Even the police that said to you, "Fat man, are you in charge? You get off the plane."
He said, "You, big man." And then looking at Ro as well, said, "Come here, you's in charge." And they were 100%, to be fair, they were very worried about Pauk fans having this protest, which was near the hotel, about vaccinations and stuff like that. So they were worried about our safety, but I tell you what, they were absolutely spot on. You know, they were like, "Jimmy, we will follow you wherever you go." I said, "Yeah, just don't follow me to the Jackson, we're all right, you know." But yeah, Mark, you watched the game. What did you think about Bo's performance away from home? Obviously, the Aviva game was fantastic, but...
Yeah, I worried about them because, like, Pauk had two chances, say, in the first 15 minutes. So to have quality and then, you know, going over there and their conditions and stuff like that. Mm. Like the lad who scored, the fellow with the afro.
Biswar.
He's a fabulous player.
Like. He's brilliant. He's 33.
Yeah, but he's savvy. He's clever. Yeah. And, you know, you see the way that he runs off the back for the goal, like that he scores. He was good. And, you know, like you need to be at that level for the level that Bulls are at. They've given their all and you need to be lucky to get through. And, you know, it's a huge ask. Like, they're you know, if Kagawa's there, he's on a fortune. You know, they've, you know, it's pre-season for them. You're hoping to catch them on the hop. It's you know, it was just unfortunate. It was excellent. But it's brilliant that you can look at it and say, I'm not there saying that it's, you know, sob stories and all this. And, you know, everybody loves this shout where it's like, you know, you're getting that trophy where it's like a moral trophy, yeah, and all that kind of. It's not moral victory.
We've got
it's not
plenty
about,
of them balls down the
years. But it's not about that. But it's showing where it's like, you know, they're doing well. Sligo, for example, could have got through if Bulger didn't get sent off in his first game. But it's like, when in years have you gone where it's like every Irish team, I'm not saying you're expecting them to get through, but you're expecting them to get through it as well at the same time. You know, Shamrock Rovers are there going to go in on Thursday. And
go, no, please God.
I know that, but they're capable of winning if they sort out their defence. Their defence, which is one of their biggest things, was a shambles the last night.
They should be beating them. Yeah. They really should.
I'm not saying that they should or they shouldn't, but you're there going, Jesus, they have a chance. Like,
yeah.
So it shows where our league is at. And it's regardless of what way you look at it from, say, what it was like 20 years ago or 15 years ago, it's like it's a lot more competitive and tactically they're seem to be a lot better and more savvy and trust themselves in Europe, which is good to see. Like they're going and they're going to win. Rather than sitting off and hoping you nick a goal.
Our three home games in the Aviva, we were absolutely box office. We were brilliant away from home in each game. As far as I'm concerned, even away in Pauk, I thought we played very well. As you said, given the conditions, given against the team of that quality. maybe if we didn't concede a home, it would have been a different story. Maybe, yeah, maybe if Kieran Kelly was there, it might have been a different story.
It's all fucking looking back on ifs and whats and maybes, yeah, but
what about it, unfortunately?
We are out, and look, we got amazing 6 weeks. I think you let the players and the staff know about it at the press meeting.
Yeah, I think I had a few too much taken that day, and blubbering, crying, trying to give Keith Long a flag. And
but there was an excess of about there was over 200 Bulls fans in that pub, which is great to see. It was like normal times, and I think at the end there was plenty of tears in the pub.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was tears of
tears of pride.
Well, I think Wardy's chance probably kicked off the tears, because you know there was a little bit that was there for you, there for us. And then the other side of it, I think it was tears of pride. This last 6 weeks we've gotten, consider when you take into account the last 18 months we've had and everyone's life, like,
yeah, it was tears of joy, tears of pride, because I mean we were just immensely proud to be first of all Bohemian, second of all to be doing the nation proud on that stage.
We're totally piss drunk in Europe after 18 months, thank God.
Piss drunk and sunburned. And look, as we said, an amazing city, amazing locals, an absolutely amazing stadium. I've seen parts that I probably shouldn't have seen. But
chicken shop.
Brilliant stuff. Mark, we'll talk about our last league home game there against your hometown, against Sligo.
Mm-hmm.
They're on an absolute downward spiral. We caught them at a perfect time, and no European hangover for us that day. I thought it was an absolutely cracking game of football. It could have been 3-2 to us. It could have been 3-2 to them. It was a brilliant game of football, and we were delighted to get the 1-0 win. But Mark, what do you think about Sligo right now and a bit of a serious drop in form? I think it's 7 games now without a win.
Four league games, cups and stuff like that, and Europe. Do you know what it was? It was a team that probably suited Sligo as well, because you know both teams play similar, and I think on the day, you know, I don't think anybody would have begrudged the draw. But at the same time, you know, Bulls had all the possession or sustained pressure without creating anything in the first half. And Romeo had the best chance of the first half and scuffed his shot, let's say. But second half, Sligo started the better for the first 10 odd minutes. And then, you know, bit of brilliance from Bucco.
He was man of the match. He was brilliant.
Yeah, but like the little turn onto his left foot, I don't think I've ever seen him hit a ball with his left foot.
It reminded me of the goal against Shells he scored in the cup in the 3-2 game when we came back.
Yeah, it was very similar.
Exactly, yeah. And he was a captain's performance.
Yeah,
as
he was excellent,
said.
Yeah.
And we got to see a player that we talk about every week. And at least when we have to talk about one player now instead of Bastien Heer, yeah, Mallon, just Mallon. Mallon was absolutely brilliant when he came on. He looks a real threat now that he's fit. As an extra player in the ranks now, which we've been missing big time.
Yeah, look, he's in here now. It's going to be like a new signing. I know we were hoping to get a couple of players in. There was one fella lined up and he seems to have been signed up with a pair of gloves in his pocket.
He's gone. Well, player to sign for Sligo Rovers, former Bowes man Andre Wright. He's back in the team now for Sligo. Might take him a few weeks to get fit. We know what he's like when he first came here. Do you think that's a big signing for Sligo, Mark?
Do you know what it is? A couple, they're reliant on he's 17, he's just gone 18, and Johnny Kenny. Romeo doesn't defend from the front. Johnny is full of running and creates. He defends from the front. He'd remind me of, like, a long time ago, Glenn Crow, defend from the front, and just pressures all the time. So it gives the midfield something to come up from behind, and you know that you can get up. But Romeo's like, he's very quick as well. That's
he's offside more times than he's onside, especially on Sunday.
Yeah, but I thought to myself that the centre half pair in the Bowls, like, I thought that they were playing. You know, there was once or twice I was like, he's getting close, give himself a yard and he's in. But I was more worried about a late run from Jordan Gibson. Because he just glides. He'd remind you of Keith Faye when he's running.
Keith Gibson is brilliant.
You know, he's, like, from their point of view, like, he's gone missing, you know?
He has, yeah, he hasn't. I think a lot of things have kind of gone wrong at Sligo, particularly, I know, the back three, which is quite solid. I'm talking McGinty, Gary Buckley and John Matten.
Yeah.
Things aren't going right back there at the moment. I thought Gary Buckley was having a fantastic season.
He was. Like, up until the break, they were the best pairing of centre-halves, I would have said. Like, first 14 games. And then it's just been, it's been carnage. It's like, you know, if things aren't going right at the back, let's say, or to concede, the front men aren't getting them out of trouble.
Yeah.
And that's where they're bringing in Andre Wright. And, you know, you're hoping to put it right at that end. But, like, they're just a team that they're down on their luck. Bulls get, you know, that goal with Bucco, and then it happens with a late goal against Derry at the weekend, you know.
Yeah.
So they just need to dig out a need to dig out a dirty win, and Buckley's teams wouldn't be renowned for that type of game.
Yeah, right. Yeah, as you said, he was managing Pats, and Pats always had that salt in their belly.
He probably needs a hard man as a assistant coach, maybe to.
You got a hard man in Bulger,
John Russell. Yeah, but Bulger got injured during the week, so he missed. He's missing, isn't he? He didn't play against Derry either. So he's a huge player for them. And the first 14 games, you would have said, he could be nailed on for player of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been a revelation. People saying it would be great to have him at Bowes. But just around the league then as well, Drogheda beat Dundalk in the Louth Derby. A much-needed win for Drogheda and Dundalk, actually now in a relegation playoff spot. Mark Doyle with 2 goals. He's having a great season up there. Pats were beaten 3-1 up in Ballybuffet.
Hat-trick, wasn't it?
Yeah, hat-trick for Awolabi. And a man you spoke about him a few weeks ago, Mark Bertram's Waterford, absolutely motoring. A 4-1 win. I think they've got
they could be in the European charge the way they're going at the moment. The way the inconsistency has been between Bowles, Derby. Like, there's nothing in the table. Like, you think Dundalk were only a few points behind us and they're still second bottom. They could still get you up this season.
Yeah, of course they really could. Yeah, put a run together.
Yeah, and just the last result, I know we touched on it there, but Rovers disgraced the nation by losing to Flora Tallinn 4-2. a bit of luck that they lose again now on Thursday. But
Extra time, as you said.
Exactly. I watched some of the game back. Manus really should have done better with that.
Could Manus be on his last legs?
I think he is,
He's had a wobbler of a season, and he's a fantastic goalkeeper. He's probably still a lot better than what's there. But, you know, mentally, maybe is it going to get to him now? He's made those few mistakes. Maybe has one eye out the door. I'm not too sure. Rossi, you're retired now. Do you think that could possibly creep in when those mistakes are creeping in?
I don't know. Like, I'd put him and Brian Murphy in the same bracket. And, like, since Sheedy and stuff have gone and Bertram's come back, Murph's reinvented again. Yeah. I thought he was man of the match against Bowles after in between the European thing when Bowles went there and had, let's say, an off day. But anything that was threaded through, Murph was like a cat. He's very quick off his line. Like, Murph's the same age as me. He's actually older than me. But, like, you know, I put Manus in the same bracket as him. I think Manus is like the likes of Gary Rogers. You see, he took off his top in Europe and he gave it to the other fellow. Man, chap shredded still and he's 39. Yeah. Like, I think he'll go for as long as he wants to. Because he's pulled out a couple of crucial saves from him this year as well. So
they've only ever won things, well, Manus. So let's hope he finishes up this year, please God.
Yeah, so then, actually, just before we finish up then, the round of Bowles, who's impression of Bowles this year, and who's your best left back and best right back for Bohemians? Because there's a bit of debate whether it's Breslin or Wilson.
But I haven't seen enough of them to make a point. The two of them have been equally as good when I've seen them live. But I think Andy Lyons is the best right full in the country.
I think so. Breslin's been fantastic. I know we have Wilson on the bench there as well, but I suppose
Feely has played there as well and done well at times. But I think Andy Lyons, I know I'm just echoing what people have said, like that, what was it? It was on Conan's show that, you know, the reporter, the fella for Virgin, said that he thinks Andy Lyons could be in England. I agree. Absolutely agree. But I think that's what Bowles, in fairness, have brought themselves to a level that now, like with Danny Grant leaving and going to Huddersfield and stuff like that, it's not that they're going to leave and go to, say, Rovers because they're winning the league or something like that. If the players are leaving, they're going to leave to go to England. And that's great financially for the club. If they do, and they do get, I suppose, what the market value is.
Young Evan Ferguson on the bench tonight as well.
Yeah, he is, And I suppose that's all we ask as Bowes fans. If you're going to leave the club, just don't go to fucking Rovers.
So, look, we're going to move on to our guest today. And we normally go back to how you signed for Bowes, but Rossi, you've got a very interesting and, suppose, unlucky but yet positive story. It goes back to Sunderland, and you signed for them. You made your debut in Highbury. Could you start off with that point and what it was like making your debut against Robert Pearce?
Dream come true. 2-0 down at half time, 1-3-2. In a nutshell, it was perfect. At the time, you know, Arsenal were probably the best team, best free-flowing football team.
2003, was it?
Yeah, and then, you know, played against Perez, you know, had a decent game, in fairness, that night. And, yeah, it was you couldn't have wrote it any better. It was perfect. Mm. It really was.
Who were you playing under then at the time, was it?
Howard Wilkinson.
And was there a couple of big names in that Sunderland squad as well? They were Premiership outfit as well.
The biggest names. Like, we played with our so-called Resi team, but Arsenal did the same. And, like, Arsenal's team would have had Jermaine Pennant, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, Oleg Losny was playing, Moritz Volz.
Francis Jeffers, Jeremy Aliadier.
Aliadier didn't play, it was Canu and Jeffers up front.
Yeah, out, you know,
Jay.
No,
yeah.
Canu, Jeffers.
William Pires, probably got mad at the television that night, of course.
I think it was Stuart Taylor in goals, though.
Stuart Taylor.
Good Barnett, as Wardy would say. So, yeah, like that was theirs, but like we didn't play with our first teamers, the likes of Kevin Phillips, Julio Arca, Niall Quinn, let's say, was retiring or retired at that stage. So, Kevin Kilbane and stuff like that didn't play. So if they were playing, the likelihood is I wouldn't have played. But staying in the Premier League was the most important thing for the team at the time.
Yeah,
they were on an awful run, and you know, I think they ended up getting relegated with record points at the time. You know, so it wasn't a great year.
How did you think you came on in the league game and you got injured 7 minutes later?
No, it was I played in the League Cup against Arsenal, then it was the League Cup in the next round against Sheffield United, and it was the FA Cup I came on against Bolton. Stephen Wright got injured and I came on, and yeah, that's what it was. Came on, the thought I tore me medial, let's say, which would have been a 3-4 month injury. So when they scanned me, this little white dot showed up in my bone. So they sent me for an x-ray, went to all the specialists, blah, 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 blah. Just went to the wrong specialist and they diagnosed it as a cyst. And what was it? I was out for about 2.5 months. Howard Wilkinson got sacked. Happiest day of my life when he did. you can quote me on this. He's the biggest fucking knob in history. Him and Steve Cottrell. So, you know, that was it. And then Mick McCarthy came in and, you know, it was a case of, you know, it was always that you get a clean slate and stuff like this when a new manager comes in. And Mick just came in and there was a chap, Tim Carter, who was the goalkeeping coach who we played with at Millwall. And Mick just came in and said, look, at whatever dirty bibs you had, you still have, you know, because he would have dealt with, say, the likes of Michael Reddy and stuff like that, who, you know, it was falling out of favour hugely. So, yeah, that was it. And Mick came in and, you know, that was it. I came back fit after a couple of months and played against Man United in the Resies. Quinton Fortune was playing left wing and he was taken off at half-time. He didn't get a touch of the ball. I just had one of them games. I was just playing and one of my mates was watching the game and I said, how was it after? And he said, you know what? He said, you played the whole game with a smile on your face. He said, it was class to watch, like. So I had a good game and that was it. And Mick pulled me after the game and he said, you're the closest thing I've seen to Stephen Carr. What he said to me after the game. So I'm on cloud fucking nine, like, thinking to myself. So
it'd be nice if you said Roberto Carlos, I suppose.
Well, I think my legs were a bit smaller at the time. But, you know, I was mad because I went down and me and the lads, and it was a Monday night, we always played the Resi game. So it was a case of, like, Monday night, we're out after the game, you know, student night. So we're there. I was just in, probably doing my hair. It was a lot more glamorous at the time, you know. So doing my hair anyways.
The blonde highlights in it.
Yeah, but all of a sudden then you're getting a phone call on me Nokia 3210 and then you're just seeing Gaffer. Like, so I answer and it's Mick McCarthy and he said, Rossi, Tommy Butler's after pulling out of the Irish under 21s. So he said, you've been called in. I'm like fucking delighted. Like, so he says, yeah, look, he says, you're in tomorrow, but he said there'll be a flight organised for you tomorrow night back to Dublin or whatever. So I'm like, oh, fucking class. So that was it. So I went away with the 21s. Don Givens was the manager, but like Andy Reid, I was rooming with Liam Miller. Jesus, God rest him. But it would have been a serious squad. You would have been looking at, because I was 19, you're playing with Brian Kerr's under 16 European team. Okay. So Graham Barrett and all these boys were in the team. But John O'Shea, let's say, was in the first team and that kind of crack. So you're going away. We played against Georgia and Albania, two of the most horriblest places I've ever seen.
I've been to Georgia myself. Yeah, it's a right kick.
Yeah, Tbilisi.
Tbilisi.
Yeah, so was there, but I wasn't in the squad, let's say, for the first game, and then in the second game I made my debut, but I came on at half time and, like, say 10 minutes in, then I tried to jump past the fella, landed awkwardly and tore me cruciate, like.
Wow. Yeah.
But ultimately it kind of saved my career because the tumor was expanding all the time in the other knee, so me tearing me cruciate, I was non-weight bearing, so it kind of preserved the other knee that I couldn't keep playing,
so it was the luckiest injury you could have
it
got,
was the life. Luckiest injury I got, yeah. So I got surgery on that, you know, the you know, crew shit like was done. So I ended up was about the 26th of May, I think, off the top of my head. So everybody's finishing up for the summer. So at the time, George's Park wasn't built. So I was sent to Lillishall for 2 weeks. But my knee started warping, my other knee, my right knee, where the so-called cyst was. And I was going back to see my specialist anyways, with the cruise shit anyways. And when I did, like I said to him, can I ask you about this or whatever? So he stuck in a syringe to see if there was any fluid, and he pulled it out and there was just fresh air. He said, you need to get that looked at again. So I went and got x-rayed, and the dot had got 4 times the size in 6 months, and it started distorting my knee because it was inside the bone eating its way out. It was the 4th of July, let's say. I went in, got the x-ray diagnosed. Well, it wasn't diagnosed. It was the Friday, the 4th. On the Monday, the 7th, I was in to get a tumour, whatever kind of tumour, in to get a biopsy done because I didn't know what it was. But it's one of two. It's a giant cell tumour, which is benign. It's a cancerous growth. It's just not life-threatening. Or it's malignant, and they'll chop off my leg from... I suppose, what would you say, six inches above your knee. So they chop it off, and effectively you've got bone cancer. So your life expectancy is 3 in 10 over the next 5 years. So yeah, so as I said, you're like 19 hearing this, you know, and it's shit. Like, but you know, I'm still here to tell the tale 20 years on.
And it was benign in the end, wasn't it?
It was a benign tumor. Yeah. So it was. It was going to be a long old time like that. I was there waiting, and the surgeon was going on holidays. It was a Monday, but they got the results back on the Wednesday. And he said, I can operate on you in the next hour. He goes, just get clarification from your club. So I rang the physio, and he just answered. And I said, look, it's this type of tumour. I said, he can operate on me now. He says, fucking brilliant. He says, yeah, I get it done. He said, look, Mick is here. He wants to talk to you. Like, so I was on the phone to Mick for a minute or two. He goes, I'll give you a shout. After surgery. So got it done. And yeah, that was kind of it, really, you know.
And then when it came to playing football, then after that, you were basically retired.
Basically retired. But like that had happened in the July, the following April. I had a reoccurrence of the tumour, so they had to snap me medial to do the tumour the second time. So when that happened in April, my contract was up with the club in the summer anyways. So I had just kind of a rolling, the PFA take the slack, and they end up paying you your wages, let's say. So then October came, and I was back as fit. I think apart from 2008 with Bose, it's the fittest I've ever been. Like, I was in the best shape of my life. And still, like, Mick brought me in and just said, look, he says, you're not insurable for 2 years. You have to be like tumor free for 2 years before you can be insured. Yeah. So effectively, you're not an asset to the club anymore. You're a liability. But like, the big man was like glassy eyes talking to me about it. I was told at 19 that I'd never play football again. So I wasn't. Yeah.
Obviously, you're looking at that. You look at it now and you see it's a positive story. You know, you never lost your leg. You actually came back and played football. Well, I suppose mental health wasn't a big thing back then. What was it like as a 19-year-old being told? After being told you were compared to Stephen Carr, you're being told 7 months later that, you know, your career is as good as gone.
I don't know. Like, it's a weird one. Like, it's not that I would have said that I was a mentally strong person or anything like that. I just, you know, I tend to be a meticulous thinker, not in a bad way. I try and look at things from every kind of angle. So it was around my 21st birthday, I can remember, that I got 48 bottles of Bud, and I had a mini DVD player. And I watched...
Sounds like a good night in.
I was watching for 2 days solid. I was just watching The Sopranos. So I went through a couple of seasons of The Sopranos in that, while literally just leaving to go to the toilet. That was it. So I was in my room. So after 2 days, I kind of just said, do you know what it is? Fuck them. I'll be the ones to prove them wrong.
Yeah.
And that's what I tried to do. And then I just, you know, I at every club I was at, I've had brilliant physios. So they work with me as best as they can, you know.
Brilliant. So the year is now 2007. I think Jordan was still following Liverpool at the time. Sean Connor, the new Bolts manager, he's pretty much a massive overhaul of the club. There must be 10 or 12 new faces come in, you included.
Mm-hmm.
And a player who, you know, Bose fans would always say one thing about you, Rossi, was that you could play fucking anywhere.
Yeah,
were you signed as a right full, or were you signed as the utility man?
No, I was signed as a right full. It just so happened that it was a case of, you know, right full, let's say. Yeah, and here he came in, and that was grand. I played right wing in that season. I don't think I played left back that year, but it was a case of pre-season in 2008. Pat asked me to play left back, yeah.
I think you did play left back that year because you got sent off against Rovers.
That was, I was playing right wing in that game.
Oh, jeez.
No, I played, played right wing. I got sent off twice in 4 days. We lost against... I'd never been booked in my whole career. And we were playing...
That's a bad trade for a defender.
We were away. Look, listen to Paolo Maldini. If you have to slide, you're already out of position. I just never was. No, it was a curse. We were playing down in Longford, down in Flancare Park at the time, and we lost against them. I think it was 3-0 we lost. Dave Mooney was playing up front for them, and we lost. But I was a sub, and I came on, and Gary Deegan was milling people. And Connors just goes to me, said, Rossi, I'm putting you on a midfield. He said, if you can leave one on him, he said, do. So as it happened, it was one of these things that, you know, he's getting the ball here and I see he's going to come this way and I fucking smash them. And the referee just comes straight red.
He wouldn't think twice about doing that to you.
Straight red.
I remember your red card against Rovers in 2007.
The second yellow. In fairness, if you watch the first five
minutes of
the game.
I watched them back last night.
Did
you see? You absolutely cracked
Barry Ferguson.
Yeah, you milled him.
Ah, in fairness, that's a straight red. I was running at pace and in them days I was quick. And everything that's bad about football now, lunging, out of control, you know, he's there, he sees it, he sees the balls coming, he opens up to pass it to the side, and I fucking size them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not one bit, sorry.
You milled him. I remember that game, we still won.
1-0, Glenn Crop.
We did indeed. You kind of have a bit of reputation, I suppose, for scoring good goals. And I remember you scored an absolute cracker against Rovers in 2008. Killian Brennan scored the first. We won 2-1.
We did.
You only ever scored good goals.
I could strike a ball. I could always strike a ball. You know, I liked slinging a pass, and I would die egg here and there. Yeah. But I just love scoring goals. So it was like... You know, people would always say to me, what's your favourite goal? And people, when they've seen the goals, will say the Pat's goal. You know, the one that I swazzed past the fish and chips and into the top corner, you know.
My
favourite goal was the goal against Cork. And it was the first goal that I scored 3 goals that season. And the 3 of them were outside the box. And it was the goal. It was just before the break. And it was 1-1. Fenny scored. Owen Harry scored an OG. And I was brought on. I just remember Fat Pat was on the Satanta. Or whatever it was, and he was there going, it was the 82nd minute or whatever it was, and he goes, oh, very defensive substitution, you know, he must be happy with his points, all this kind of thing or whatever. And it was like Glenn Cronin won a header, Jason Byrne just set me, I just fucking pinged the bottom corner. But it was the reaction of the whole place. Even when I think about it now, I get chills when I think about it, because it was like, you can see the dugout. And they're up, like all the players are up, and the crowd literally just went erupted. And I think it was the first time in that particular season we had felt like we went top of the league then going into the break. It was like that going, yes, we could win the league, you know?
We won the double that year, cup final. You cracked one off the bar. You got away with that.
Mm-hmm.
I know Derry missed two as well. Did you ever take penalties? Or were you lined up to take a penalty that day?
100%.
Had you practicing trying to hit the far right?
No, I'd never go high. So it was, I don't know if it was tiredness or what. I can't even remember taking the pen. I just remember that it was...
You remember winning the cup.
I do, yeah, but I remember that it was, you know, it was Rory Higgins and Kevin Deary who missed the two penalties. You know, Glenn Cronin had done. My penalty was in my head, supposed to be like his. I do just pass it. I open my body because 77% of penalties go across the body. So like 3 and 4 pens, you always go across your body. So I'd always open up and go the opposite way. Not because of percentages. I was more comfortable doing that because I feel like when I strike across myself, if you tried to whip it, I could fucking kill a pigeon or something. You know.
And when the ball hit the bar, was it this old bollocks moment in your head, or you said, you know, the lads after me will probably have it, because I think we were ahead at that stage.
It was they had missed just before me, so Derry had missed. So effectively,
it was 3-2 at the time, I think.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I think it was. You know, we had scored. I don't know if I was the third penalty.
If you were the fourth.
If I was the fourth,
and you were the next one.
Right. So it wasn't. I had all the confidence in the world in Murph, to be honest.
Yeah.
Never mind the penalty takers. I just believed that Murph could save anything, to be honest. And that was what it was. And Killian Brennan was the one who told Murph, where Rory Higgins and Derry always go.
Because Brennan had played for them at Derry, yeah. For years.
So
yeah.
He had said to them to go across their body, and he dived that way both times and saved them, you know.
That was an amazing season. 2009, we won the league, and we won the League Cup as well.
Satanta Cup as well, no?
No, Satanta Cup was 2010.
Was it?
As we said, we listened to your conversation on the LOI Central podcast, yourself and Murph pointing the fingers at each other for the Salzburg goal.
We went to our experts, you know, us two idiots know nothing about football. So we went on to a couple of people and I asked Dave Henderson, he said 100%. He said it was your fault. I asked James Talbot, he said 100% your fault. Andy McNulty, 100% your fault.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Shane Supple got Shane back Supple. And said it was your fault as well.
Now, I'm not sure if it's a bias with goalkeepers or something like that, but yeah, it was your fault.
Guess thing is, Dave Henderson was the one. It was we had been back for some kind of, I can't remember exactly why that team was back, but we were back for a game or something. We were having a couple of beers in the Porterhouse across the road actually at the time, and fans were coming up to me going, "Rossi, we don't blame you for Salzburg, we don't blame you." And Dave Henderson was just there, "Would you fuck off?" Like, he said it was Murph's fault. Keeper ran out and didn't call for it.
Mm. And Murph was at the edge of a 6-yard
look
box.
The way I look at it is, I was in a bad starting position, but like, you know,
Colin actually asked me to tell you that Henderson said that.
I know he would, yeah. No, like the way I look at it is, regardless, I was the one in control of the ball. I tried to header it in the air to hook it away, but it just didn't pan out that way.
I watched it again a couple of times today, and you are looking at Murph and go, "What the fuck are you doing?"
No, but I looked at Murph, and their striker, like across from me, I just seen him move slightly. So I was panicked going, you know, I know it's late in the game and I'm going to header it back that way. But long and short of it is, like, Yanko and fucking Ken O'Man go up for a header.
Yanko was doing that every day.
He was 6'6". I'm there. But the two would have missed it. And it just skidded off the surface. And when it skidded, it's on the inside of me. And in fairness to the winger, he gambled. Yeah. And
I was in the Des Kelly stand for that. One of many times, I suppose, I cried my eyes out at Bowes. But look, that we probably deserved to go through on the balance of two games. They obviously got a goal, what was it, 88 minutes.
Manager's with a prick as well for them, wasn't he?
Awful. Shy bag.
Yeah. You are, though, in many respects, one of the few players that probably come out with a 2010 year as a very respectful...
One of the few still allowed in this podcast.
Yeah, one player that is kind of actually well-respected and liked amongst Bowes fans, because the 2010 was a shocking year, the way it ended. A lot of players are really well-disliked from that year. I know you, thankfully, didn't get to play in TNS.
Do you know what it is? It was... I don't think a game could have went as more wrong as it did, like... trying to remember it back, because I was on the bench, like I didn't play in either of the games. You know, we beat them at home.
1-0. Brennan scored, didn't he?
It was Paddy Madden, I think. Was it?
I think it was Brennan. We'll have to have a look it up.
Anyways, but it was you know, they had chances in that game, and I think it was, I'm not saying that we took it for granted, I don't mean it to be like that, but the game over there on an Astro, you know, the game started at 100 mile an hour, and you know, they scored, which is grand, and Paddy Madden had a header. And if he is to score that, they need to win 3-1, let's say, on the night.
On the away goals, yeah.
Yeah, but he missed it. It was an unbelievable ball in by Killian as well, and he missed a header. And it just went awful. There was fans there, which I wouldn't be in favour of doing, but there was fans like on social media. And I'd go by, went back on them on Facebook saying, like, "You need to cut that shit out."
Yeah,
no, absolutely. You know, it's to say that they went over to give that performance when they didn't. You know, it just, unfortunate, the night you're there thinking it's a Welsh team, you're going to walk all over them, blah, 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 blah. But it just didn't happen that way. Like, it wasn't good. Like, it wasn't good.
Oh, it's 1 euro trip that we can be very glad that we weren't on.
Thunderous rain as well,
wasn't
it?
Yeah, shocking. Apparently everyone said it was the grimmest kind of trip they've ever been on.
The weird thing about it is, it's like any game that TNS played in Europe.
See them this year.
It's not even
They're fucking deadly.
They play their games in Wrexham's pitch, always.
The race course.
Yeah, but we never apparently sent an official over to challenge why it's been played on an Astro, because it wasn't up to scratch to play it on.
It's like a fucking fireside pitch.
Yeah. It was a shocker. But shocking, like, pitch.
Was it as bad as Dundalk's?
It was a lot quicker. Jesus Christ, it was like a hockey pitch. It was that quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was light.
So 2011 was your final year for Bowes. Another massive overhaul of the club that year. I suppose we didn't know we'd even have a team in the league come early January. A lot of new faces were in there, but it was a very good team all the same. Yourself and Owen Heary, some of the few players that
Barnsley was there. Bistoff Flood played up front.
Christy Fagan
was there.
Killian Brennan signed back about a week before the season started, away to Bray away. Players like
Gerald O'Brien. Forget about him.
I was going to say
Pat seemed to win the league. Actually came from Balls that year, didn't he?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He did. We had Aidan Price was there as well. Price and Liam Burns were brilliant at the back that year. Liam Burns, who was nicknamed Pregnant Arse, but I always thought he was brilliant. With yourself and Gerald O'Brien, two players that could. You could play anywhere. Like, I mean, I was going to ask you. I mean, you were a right back.
Yeah.
You could play left back. You could play centre back. You could play left mid, right mid, centre mid. I never seen you play up front. I seen Gerald Ryan play maybe a centre attacking mid once.
Uh-huh.
But, you know.
Like in one of the European games against our Crownus, me and Gerald played in midfield together as well. Do you know what it was? It just happened by default, let's say. Pat asked me in pre-season would I play. We were playing over and we're in Estepona. You know, you get 10 grand off the FAI to go away and do some altitude training, let's say. So we went to Spain and we were playing against somebody in Pacos. He said, look, I'm going to try out a left back or whatever. And I was like, yeah, grand. And I had a decent game. And it was just the way that it started. And that's the way it went, you know.
As you're talking about Pat there, I think while he won a couple of league titles with Bowes and whatnot, how did you find the style of football, which I think is probably criticised by Bowes fans, that maybe with the players we had, it could have been better?
You know, at the time, football hadn't evolved the way that it is now. I think in the League of Ireland, you'd probably take your hat off to Paul Cook there. He was probably the first one that had cemented in, say, 4-3-3 or 4-5-1. But he had the personnel to do it. Like, you've got Richie Ryan, who I played with at Sunderland. Like, and while he was a fabulous footballer, athletically, he was poor. Like, he'd do the 100 metres, like, probably as slow as a slug. You know, he's that slow. But he can make a football dance, you know, he can put it wherever he wants. And you have Matty Blinkhorn up top, so you have a target man to work off that. Mm. So, you know, could he have, maybe, but, you know, he probably tried to do that at Shamrock Rovers and it didn't happen for him. You know, changing the style of play that doesn't suit him and, you know, it evolved and maybe it bypassed him. But the players that Pat would have dealt with and the way you have to be with people now probably doesn't work. I'm not saying he's a dinosaur. I mean that...
There is that generation of managers nowadays, even in the Premier League.
People are criticising Paul Doolan coming back saying Paul Doolan played a terrible style of football. He's now on that loan in the first division. So there's a couple of people saying, is he ready to come back into management?
That football's now surpassed Jose Mourinho. Like.
That's what it is, because his whole thing was about like finding weaknesses and stifling their good players so that they can allow him, you know, to do it. But, you know, they're criticising him. But look at his trophy cabinet.
Yeah, it doesn't lie.
It doesn't, and he's in probably in the league that'll suit him the best, because it's about tactics and, you know, not squeezing and pressing. It's like break us down in the final third. Like,
well, that's the Italian league perfect.
I've got a couple more questions for you, and Jordan has a few as well. Well, who was the best player you played with at Bowes?
Your
time there.
Right, so, like, if I was to pick one standout player.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is? There's a couple for different reasons. Like, Murph. Murph, you'd say, because he's probably arguably, the best.
He revolutionised goalkeeping in that league, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
He raised the bar so much when he came in 2007.
Absolutely. So, like, if you're looking at a standout player, and he was the one in our squad that the press were trying to push to get back because they believed that he could, you know, it was Keith Fahey, say, the year previous, and then it was Murph, and they'll always latch on to somebody to highlight the league.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. Jack Bourne last year.
Yeah, absolutely. So you'd be going standout player Murph. Like, if it's a defender, it's Heary, because, like, you know, even now, I'd say if I wanted to race him up against the wall, he'd try and win. You know, his will to win and the way he trained, like, he played, literally. You know, talented, you have to be looking at probably... You know, the likes of, I know he's probably not a favourite there, but from a football point of view, Neil Fenn was a scandalously good footballer.
Would he be a one, if you had to pick a player that probably should have done better in the career that you played with the Bulls.
He spent the whole year without scoring. 2007 nil Fenn, didn't he?
And he scored in the first game of the season against Galway in 2008.
Yeah. Strippers and whores when Neil Fenn scores.
Yeah. Oh, do you know what it was? It was Fenny would probably now, if he was there, he'd be playing in the 10 and he'd make a team tick. You know, but it was 4-4-2 in them days, and that's what it was. You know,
Neil Fenn played out right mid for us quite a lot as well. He played out wide. Who's a player that you hated playing against in your time at Bows? Probably a winger that you would have come up against.
I wasn't really too arsed about wingers there.
Very, very bullish and arrogant. I like that.
I suppose, you know, when I was later on and I was at Longford, Davy McMillan was horrible to play against. Because he's a clever player and he dropped in, my legs had gone a wee bit at that stage, and he was dropping in short and running in behind. He was a hard nut that particular time.
And a couple of, actually on the team then, Crowerborn.
Ooh.
Depends who you're playing against.
If you're a Bowes man, you're
playing one up front. They're playing one up top.
One up top, I'd play JL.
Yeah.
It'd depend who you're playing against, because I can remember having a conversation when he was coming in. I was with Owen Heary. We were in DCU having a cup of tea, and the shout was JL was coming back from Cardiff and signing with us. And I was there asking him, what's the story with Crowe, or whatever. And he said, you know what it is? They're brilliant together. And I was like, why? And he goes, Crowe will give you the same all the time. And I can remember we played against, was it in when Connors was manager? But we played in Talca against Shamrock Rovers, and it was like nip and tuck. We were playing, Ty Purcell was playing up front for them, and they had a couple of, say, corners that were dodgy.
It was the one-all game, was it?
1-0. We got one chance, clear chance, and Crowe scored.
Yeah.
And that's what Crowe did. You know, you're talking about the League Cup. I got sent off after 15 minutes or whatever. Crowe scored, But that's what he did. But he said, on the horrible, say, Tuesday nights, where you're away to Waterford and it's windy.
Mm.
He goes, JL, you'll win 5-0 and JL score a hat-trick.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's why they're so different. You know, say the 2008 season, Jason Burns remember for scoring the winner against Strada.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't play much that particular season because Fenny and Crowe were so good together.
Mm.
So it largely would come down to who we were playing against.
Right.
Defending from the front, it'd be Crowe all day long. If you need a goal, it'd be JL. If you're in control of the ball, if you were there, but to be honest, I've never seen a fella get so much stick for his body shape. Let's say because he was heavy set looking, Crowe was, and people would think that he was fat, but there wasn't a pick on him.
No, exactly.
His legs and arms were huge, and he defended. He was so quick. Like when he was closing you down, and he was, I never played against him, but he was a prick because you'd hear him, at Graham Gartland in a game, and you could be left back, and Gartland would have time on the ball, and he'd be there going, shank at him like this, you know. He'd be running, closing him down, going, shank all the time, and you'd hear him up the top. It was very funny.
I suppose we don't know how privileged you were in 2008 to have those three players winning the team, to have those three who were probably the best strikers in the league at the time.
Absolutely. At that particular time, there were the only strikers in the league that had, you know, caps for Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, and Jao had had his caps for Ireland before he went to Cardiff. So you had that. But talent-wise, Killian Brennan for me was a joy. The player that I liked playing with most was Killian Brennan, because as a left back, I'd always try and make the winger, no matter where, because I could run in them days. So it was I'd say, fuck that, make them mark me.
Yeah.
So I'd be bombing. So I just give the ball to Killian, and Killian would always go inside. So it just allowed me to go. We were very cohesive in that, and it was a joy to play with.
Killian had played left back as well before, so we knew all about it. As you said, he always used to go inside.
Yeah, absolutely.
He centre back for Rovers at some stage as well, didn't he?
I remember he did play centre half once. Yeah. He's one of my favourite players of all time, anyway, Killian Brennan.
And I have a couple of questions for you again then. You have to pick a five-a-side team from your footballing career. He was in it, and you're in it. You were one of the players.
Probably the goalkeeper's easy enough, is it?
Well, from my career or for... No.
It's who you played with.
Oh, Tommy Myra in goals.
Morph, I'll be happy.
No.
That's all right.
He won't be fucking listening.
No, I'll send it to him. right, if I was in it, I'm going to play, say, defender on my own. So midfielders and strikers. Julio Arca from Sunderland. From Sunderland, Argentinian player. He's like, he's a fucking god in Wearside. Like, he's, yeah, Julio. Like, look, I'll tell you what, I'll make it easy and do a League of Ireland one. Yeah, so Murph, I'd have myself and Heary, because Heary will just stay at the back and I can float. Midfielder, Stevie O'Donnell. Stephen O'Donnell. So there's four, was it?
That's four. That's someone four.
Up top. In that team, I'd have to go, right, I'm taking Heary out and I'm going at the back, because I'd have Killian and Stevie.
That's a good midfield.
And then up top, oh, I think in a five-a-side, it'd have to be Jao.
Jao Byrne in the five-a-side.
Just for goals, man. Just for goals.
So it's Brian Murphy, yourself, Killian Brennan, Stephen O'Donnell, and Jason Byrne. There's a fair few cunts in that team, but come down and play against us on fucking Hardwick Street on Thursday night. We'll see how well you are.
Like, oh, Jesus Christ. I was there.
Players, yeah. And here, you said, what did Maldini say? If you're sliding, you're already out of position.
Yeah.
This is Mr. Slide beside you.
Absolutely.
Last ditch. Yeah, last ditch, FM.
That's it.
And a question here again. Who's the best cracking a night out? Well, anyone you've been out with in football. Without Terence or Starling and hanging them.
Best crack on a night out, Fenny.
Yeah,
Fenny's really, good crack. Yeah, because his gear is leery as fuck as well. Like, he'd be when you see all these fellas from The Only Way Is Essex, like, Fenny was dressing like them before it ever became popular.
And yeah. If you could sit down and have a point at any footballer, dead or alive,
Gaza.
Yeah. Gaza, yeah. That's a good answer. Nobody said Gaza just yet. Everyone usually says Maradona, and we know exactly what they're up to.
I think it'd be interesting, but I'd you know, like, there's a talent that wasn't looked after, you know, and
could he be looked after? I don't know.
You would?
Could he be looked after?
I don't know, but you know, it's a travesty to see in this day and age.
Yeah,
you know, it's, you know, it's not that long ago that he retired from football, and he's yeah. I think it's like, say, drink and gambling, you know, like you see the likes of Merson and all these. I think it's horrific. Yeah. And it's here as well. Like, it's you know, you just don't see it.
Mm. Rossi, thank you very much. That was an absolutely brilliant insight into some of the years around Bowes. And obviously, you had a decent enough career after Bowes with Dundalk, Pats and Longford. But we don't care about those clubs, unfortunately. So we will move on to our FAI Cup fixture against the Scum on Sunday. Probably a game we probably didn't want to get them this early in the cup, but you know what? I'm bullish and I'm arrogant, and I think we're going to knock them out. Are we expecting the usual 11?
Well, I've got 18 months of lockdown built up, and I can't wait to fucking split them with these.
Yes!
Guys. Because the best thing about it was there's a limited crowd, and you know, with 100,
yeah,
they can all hear the personal abuse that they're getting.
Yeah.
And we have some personal hatred for these cunts. And you probably gotten yourself against the Scum fans.
I don't care. Like, to be fair, after the Salzburg game, apparently I was quite liked with the Shamrock Rovers fans. Like, you know, we played them after Salzburg, and we played at a 12 o'clock kickoff or something, yeah, Daily Mount on a Sunday, and I was playing right back in the game or whatever, and they had this big banner saying, you know, Salzburg clipped your wings, or yeah, whatever it was, you know. And when I was walking out in the, I don't know, it was the first half or second half, I was walking out and we were shooting up towards the Des Kelly. It was like that. They were singing, "There's only one Mark Rossiter." Like, yeah, but sure, what can I do? I just gave them a clap like that and gave them a smile. You know, like, I can't, you know, you take the good with the bad, and it is what it is, you know.
I think we had 200 fans at the last game. It really helped the team get over the line, the kind of support. We've got 400 this time, which is still a bit of an utter disgrace. What do you think about Rovers? Will they be tired after this European game now on Thursday? Are they going to be leggy? Are they going to put all their eggs in one basket for that game? Or do you reckon they'll have enough in them to kind of turn it 2. around?
2.3 million says yes.
In fairness, they have a squad that's built for this.
Yeah.
You know, you take out Gaffney, you put in Aaron Green, you know, you lose Pico Lopez,
is going to be injured, as far as I know.
Scales, don't you?
The scale is still there.
Yeah, he's still there.
So they do have Sean Hoare, O'Brien, Pico as centre-halves if they're going to play three at the back.
But even if you put Scales in there and you have Kavanagh or whatever, put Finner left-back and Gano right side, let's say.
They do have a lot of depth.
They've got a lot of depth, but the only thing I'd be there saying, and I've said it openly, I said, like, the Bulls are playing the best brand of football in the country.
Yeah. We're probably going to play the usual 11. Now, unless maybe he might say, right, well, Malin gets in there somehow. I don't think he will. So. It's going to be the same team, yeah. No real shock with that. I mean, as you said, it's a good chance to put them out of the cup. It's a good chance to put one hand on the cup, as far as I'm concerned right now.
Sligo are gone. They've been a bogey team this year. I think, at the end of the day, one of us has to win the cup as well. When you think about your fourth place for Europe, we don't end up getting towards.
Absolutely.
So
and as you said,
let's put it into our own fucking hands in that regard too.
The only thing you'd be saying, if you get through it, people are going to assume that they're going to do it. Like, but Dundalk are still there.
Dundalk are still there.
They're capable of beating anyone. They're still laced.
Derry are there and
they're laced with quality.
You kind of want to hope that Dundalk draw against Pats, or you know, people knock each other out over the next round.
Do you know what it is? You don't want to look beyond Sunday and just
I don't think they will be either.
Yeah.
So what would your prediction be for Sunday, Mark?
I think they'll win. I think Bowes will beat them.
What score, you reckon?
108-0. I'll go for a 2-1.
Yeah.
2-1.
I'm going to go with 2-0 to Bowes. And Jordan?
I'm going to stick to the 1-0. True and true. We're going to go into this game. We're going to fucking spit venom for 90 minutes. Hopefully the same players can go back to their girlfriend and complain about it like they did last time.
Yeah.
And get into their Instagram ears anyway.
Yeah.
And look, we're going out here, man. Hopefully beat these cunts and there'll be bollocks after Thursday, please God.
I think we will. I suppose, as always, before we wrap up, we want to thank our sponsors, Grand Cru Beers, Vault Fashions, New Age Barbers.
They're 25% cuts as well before the derby, for anyone in Bowes jersey going in.
So be sure to get a haircut. Mark, have you any shout-outs to anyone at the moment?
Do you know what it is? Like, I was at the game, the Sligo game there, and I just love going back when you've got the, like, say, you know, you see all the old faces like Huey Dempsey, Lynn O'Neill, all these people that I wasn't talking to Lynn, like, but, you know, Collie O'Connor, for example, you know, I'd still be in touch with him every so often, and it's, you know what it is? It's not just a club that it is. It's ingrained in people's lives, and I love it. And long and short of the story, I had five of me favourite years in football for different reasons there, and to be honest, if I could have stayed there for the whole of my career, I would have been happy to do so.
Brilliant stuff. Right, Rovers on Sunday, let's fucking do this. Come on, the Bowes. Come on, Bowes.
Cause we all follow Bowes wherever they play. We don't care if it's home or away. We had the Bowes and we're proud of our name. So we'll all bounce around and we'll sing it again.